Okay, good evening. We'll start. It's Tuesday evening, October 30th. This is Rabbi Feldman's share. This week's share is sponsored by Arlene and Arthur Ice to commemorate the arsite of Arlene's father, Mr. William Steinlauf, Triple Zev, Ben Baruch, Adonai Shalom.
Okay, good evening. We're continuing a general series. This is going to take us a few weeks, talking about topics of chesed. And for tonight, I'd like to continue with some of the generalities. And in future weeks, we'll be into more specific examples, some of which have come up in the parasha last week, some of the parasha this week. Sefer Bereishis in general is a source of chesed for a lot of it. And some of these themes, Chachmas Zarech in the last week's parasha, Bikacholim also in the last week's parasha, and Nichum Avelim coming up now. So those will be topics we'll discuss more specifically in coming weeks. Tonight I want to talk in general about, 2 weeks ago we spoke about concept, the realm of an Adam L'Chaveru as distinct from an Adam L'Makom. Now specifically, how does that manifest itself in the realm of Chesed, specifically as a general concept? Let's speak a little bit of an overview about that and then to go into some more specifics in the coming weeks. So there is a, Chesed is a mitzvah. Seems to appear in quite a few places in the Gemara, coming from quite a few sources. Now, on the one hand, the Gemara tells us in the Sefer Sota that we have a mitzvah to follow after God. And the Gemara asks, so how exactly are you going to walk after God? He's an Eishol Chol, he's a burning fire, it's not something that you can physically do. So the Talmud tells us that the answer is that you're following his midos, you're following his attributes, that just like he is Kovermation, he buries the dead, and he visits the sick, and he comforts the mourners, etc., etc. So that's the type of behavior that we should have as well. And in that context, as the Gemara over there in Masechta Sota tells us, that Chesed is really the bookend of the Torah. Chesed starts and ends the Torah, frames the Torah. The first and very beginning, we have Malbish Arumim, that God gave clothes to the naked, to the Adam and Chava and Gan Eden. Could be that even before this was an act of Chesed. That's the first one the Torah spells out. Rabbi Chalap sleep in his introduction to his father Sefer Chof Yamin, so he quotes from his father of word that when the Pasuk tells us that Kadosh Baruch Hu put Adam and Chav in Gan Eden, that very act, the Pasuk says, V'enichayu, we put them down, and that could be read as he gave them hanach, he gave them a rest, he gave them a place to relax, so to speak, and that's the fulfillment of Chachmas HaSarchim. So it could be that even before Malbish HaRumim, even though the Gemara lists that as the opening chesed of the Torah, that maybe there's one act that's not so explicit before that of Chachmas HaSarchim. In any event, the Torah starts with chesed, it ends with Tovah Meisim, that Moshe Rabbeinu is buried directly by the Ribbono Shel Olam himself. So God models acts of chesed from the very beginning to the very end of the Torah. And the Talmud says that we have to imitate that, we have to follow God's path. And you find this idea represented in a couple other places as well. Gemara tells us in the Masechet Bava Metzia that the discussion that God had, that Moshe, excuse me, has with Yisro, when Yisro is telling him that it's not a good system that he has, that people should all come to him with all their problems, he should make a hierarchy, he should develop a courtroom system, and there should be different levels, and part of the way it should work. So Yisro is telling him the whole story, says, V'hodakim v'sederech yelchuba, you'll teach them the way that they should go, that's a ma'isa, asher ya'asun. And this pasuk, the Gemara in Bava Metzia, has a different drasha on each word. It says, V'hodakim v'sederech yelchuba, you should teach them the way they should go. What does that mean? That means tikachol. Teach them that they should visit people who are sick, they should go to visit people, and different acts of chesed and gemilos chesed, and is also learned out from this pasuk, and other things also about how to live your life in general, base chayim, to make a living, different aspects of how you should live life. Yisro is saying you should teach the Jews to do all of these things. And apparently Moshe agrees, so that's also a source. Some quote this as a source for chesed min ha-Torah, some specifically for bikachol min ha-Torah is quoted. That this is, this instruction by Yisro to Moshe is also brought as part of the mitzvah here. In addition to that, you also find the same idea a third time. The Gemara tells us in the Masechet Shabbos, at the pasuk that we recite every day, the Shir HaSayam. So we say, Zekeh Levi Anveyu, this is my God and I will glorify him. Herman Wuk used that as the title of his book. So the Gemara asks, what does it mean, Zekeh Levi Anveyu? How do you glorify God? So the Gemara has over there really two answers. One answer is that you should do mitzvahs in a nice way, the topic of Hiddur Mitzvah, which we've spoken about here in the past. And the other answer the Gemara gives is Ani Vahu. That's what the word should be split into half. Ani V'Aveihu, Ani Vahu, I will be like him. Havi Domelo, you should make yourself similar to him. And that means that, again, the same way he is that just as he is kind and merciful, so you too also have to be kind and merciful. Same type of idea. It's expressed a little bit differently because the Gemara in Sota talks about actions and this talks about attributes, so it's perhaps a little bit different, but the same idea. You want to be like God, so you should follow these attributes, and that's how you fulfill the mitzvah of Zekeli V'Anzei. So on the surface, that's already three sources for the topic of chesed, for the whole realm of chesed as a whole. So there is a nice little sefer, which we also mentioned in the past, called Orech Meisharim, which is a guidebook on midos in general. And the Orech Meisharim explains that really these are not redundancies, these are three different levels of how this happened. That, it's not the order exactly what we said it. The first is Ashuras Hayam. So the Yamsif is split, and the Jews are saved, and they say, wow, I want to be like God, Hevi Domelo, I want to be like God and his attributes. So that was a spontaneous commitment given by the Jewish people themselves. They said, this is the way to be, we should be Balei Chasad. Then, later on, Yisrael comes to Moshe after hearing about this, and Yisrael tells to Moshe, you should know, it's not just what they decided to do, but this is the way the world works, this is the way the world should be, have people caring about each other and doing chasadim for each other, and that's why how a society works. And he tells Moshe this, and Moshe says, right, makes sense, we should do that also. And then it comes, then it comes as a mitzvah. So it's basically three levels of progression. The Jews volunteer on their own. Yisro tells Moshe this is the way the world needs to be. And the Kodesh Baruch Hu commands it as a mitzvah, all coming to the same idea that this is the way we have to perform. In order to be godlike, we have to have this attribute of chesed. And then on top of that, we have another mitzvah, a very famous mitzvah, appears in Parshas Kedoshim. Rabbi Akiva tells us it's the major principle of Torah, is that cloud level of the Torah. We're told V'ahav t'l'reacha kamocha, that you have to love your neighbor as yourself. And that's a very complicated mitzvah to figure out what exactly are the parameters of that mitzvah. And we'll talk a little bit about that more in a few minutes. But the whole mitzvah of V'ahav t'l'reacha kamocha is very difficult. It's a beautiful concept that we like repeating all the time, but what does it mean practically speaking? Because if it's read literally, and it sounds like from the Rambam, like he basically does read it pretty literally, if you're going to say it as a affirmative mitzvah, so what does that mean? So kamocha, that word becomes very difficult to translate. It's one thing to say love your neighbor as yourself. You have to do things for your neighbor the same way you do for yourself. It's hard to fulfill that mitzvah. It's almost impossible to fulfill that mitzvah with even one person. Even one person in the world, you can't actively work on behalf of the same way you work on behalf of yourself. It's not physically possible. You're not going to take care of their kids the same way you take care of your kids. You're not going to support their family the same way you support your family. It just doesn't work. Which is why this is an issue that the Ramban seems to bring up in his commentary to Chumash. And many in the Forsh, like the Marsha and later Svarim, assume that really this should be seen as a negative mitzvah. Even though it sounds like the most positive mitzvah, this should basically be seen as a negative in the formulation that the Gemara has in Masechta Shabbos, where the Gemara tells us that the potential convert came to Hillel and said that he wants to convert, but he wants to hear the whole Torah on one foot. So Hillel says, after Shammai turns him down, so Hillel says basically the negative formulation, what's known as the golden rule. He says, Ma'da'alach shani l'chevrcha lo shrati, that which is hateful to you, so you shouldn't do it to anyone else. So that's the reverse. That's the negative formation of V'ahav t'l'reacha kamocha. And there are those who say it's got to be that way because you can't have a positive formulation. It's just impossible. So it must mean that you shouldn't do things to people that you wouldn't want done to yourself. And there are many specific ideas that develop in the later sources where we're told that basically the key factor prohibiting them is V'ahav t'l'reacha kamocha. Like, for example, we spoke a couple months ago about the prohibition to damage somebody's property. You're not allowed to break somebody's property. So how do you know that? It doesn't actually say so explicitly in the Torah. In the Torah it says that if you do damage somebody's property, you have to pay for it. That's what we learned in the beginning of Parshas Mishpatim, the different categories of damages, different ways in which you could cause a hazard to somebody and you have to pay for it. But it doesn't say anywhere that you can't do it. So maybe I might think that if I come with a sledgehammer and smash your car window in, and I'm ready to pay for it, I have my checkbook with me, so I didn't do anything wrong. I pay for it. It doesn't matter that I damage the property. So how do you know that it's prohibited? So the whole discussion and the story, I'm trying to find what exactly is the source. So a lot of cases they assume that it's v'hapler ech kamocha. You wouldn't want somebody doing that to you, so therefore it's not a kind of thing to do to somebody else. So that's the way many assume, that this is essentially a negative concept, even though it's phrased very much like a positive concept. But the Rambam and a lot of other Rishonim do see it as a positive concept, that you should worry about other people the way you worry about yourself. So therefore kamocha, it's difficult, it can't mean to the degree, it would have to mean in the style. The same way that you worry about yourself, you want yourself to have a good life, so too you want that for others. The same kind of things you want for yourself, you want for others. And in that context, the Rambam says that all the mitzvot that we have of chasadim, the whole idea of taking care of people, so that's a reflection of this mitzvah of Yahav to Recha Kamocha. And he really codifies it all in this Mishneh Torah in the context of one, in the context of Nichum Avelim and Kur, in the context of Hochus Evel. He talks about all the chasadim over there in the 14th parak of Hochus Evel. And he says this is all aspects of the mitzvah of Yahav to Recha Kamocha. And then he has a strange line there which we have to figure out what he means. It's a big discussion what he means. And it says that even though all of the acts of chesed that we do are derived from the Ahav L'Recha Kamocha, the specific formats that we have, the Kerchol and Machnas V'Zorchim and Nicham Aveilim, etc., etc., these are rabbinical mitzvahs. So it's a very hard idea to understand. He uses this expression, Divrei Sofrim, which in general is a topic of discussion. What does the Rambam mean when he says Divrei Sofrim? It either means something that we need the rabbis to help us figure out what it means, or it means like it sounds like, that this is something the rabbis instituted. So why should it be that these are mitzvahs to Rabbanan, and if they're all really subsets of chesed, why should we need a special institution to make them obligatory? So that's a little bit of a difficult point, and there are different suggestions that are out there. Rabbi J. David Weiss wrote an article once in which he suggested that really they are all mitzvahs in our Torah. But maybe you can have somebody who's going to say, listen, if I was sick, I wouldn't want anyone bothering me at home. I wouldn't want anyone knocking on my door. I'd like to be left alone. So I'm not going to visit anybody else who's sick because it's not something I'm interested in. So we have Larecha Kamocha. I should do for others what I do for myself. So I'm not going to do that for anybody else because I'm not interested in having anybody do it for me. So therefore, the Chazal had to institute that there are certain things you have to realize that many people do want, and even if you don't realize it yourself. So this is a chesed that exists, and by really it's a fulfillment of the mitzvah min HaTorah. That is a fulfillment of Yahav to Re'echa Kamocha. But since we don't always realize it, so we need Chazal to set up these certain categories, so we should know how to behave. And that's how the Blaise suggests, and other approaches which also work with this idea of trying to figure out what exactly is added by the specific institutions on top of Yahav to Re'echa Kamocha. But in many events, so we seem to have a whole bunch of sources. So we have all of these sources which we all group together. They're all the imitating God type of sources. V'halachta b'drachav, again, being a meta theme in the Torah, as the Chafetz Chaim points out in his introduction to his book on Chesed, Sefer Avos Chesed. So the Chafetz Chaim points out that the mitzvah of walking in God's ways, so v'halachta b'drachav, what's known as the Mitashio Day, appears at least 8 times in Sefer Dvarim alone. At least 8 times there, you find this directive in different forms, whether it's Achar Yisrael Kechem Telechu, Palach to Bedrachov, whatever, Lechus Bedrachov, however it's phrased, 8 versions of the same idea. So that's one theme. And you also have Yahav to Recha Kamocha, which seems to be another idea. So what exactly is the necessity for 2 separate sources, 2 separate groups of sources? That's a big discussion. A lot of Acharonim have the idea that really these are 2 separate goals. They have a lot of overlapping activities, and very often they're talking about the same kind of actions, but they have 2 separate goals. On the one hand, V'yahav t'recha kamocha, that's about helping people, that's about giving people what they need, and that's very result-oriented. That's a topic that we spoke about 2 weeks ago, when we said that the Adam HaFaveros in general tend to be more result-oriented, more focused on actually accomplishing what needs to be accomplished. And V'halach t'bedrachav, that's more about you. That's more about creating a type of personality that is godlike, and that's more intent-oriented. And perhaps you need both in order to fully complete the personality that we're looking for. So you have this goal of creating a personality that's like God, and that requires you to consciously act in a way that is compassionate. And then you also have this goal of giving people what they need, and that could vary based on what they actually need. In fact, as Moshe Sternberg suggests, that if you have Tzarecha Kamocha by itself, that would only limit us to doing what's basically in front of us, what people actually need. And therefore, that's why the rabbis had to come and institute these specific mitzvahs of Vikar Cholam and Icham Avelim, etc., in order to tell us that even if it's not in front of us, it's something somebody needs, still we have to go seek it out, because that's these specific formats of Chazal then instruct us to do. So that's a question. That could also be that that's really something that comes from the component of being like God. Like if you're just concerned about the Ha'afarecha Kamocha, then if there's nobody in your immediate vicinity who needs anything, so maybe in theory it's not as pressing. But if we're dealing with Mitashio Dei, Ba'alachta B'Drachav, so that requires you to go seek out opportunities. And that's really what typifies Avraham Avinu, and that's really the theme of this Sefer. And we see that Avimelech says to Avram, he says that God is with you in everything that you do. And so some of the first can explain, I think with Henoch Libowitz, there was a discussion about this in the Sefer on Chumash, that what was it that Avram did that made Avimelech realize this? So after Sodom was destroyed, so then he moves his tent to Gerar so that there should be more guests coming, that now this population was different, so he needed to relocate in order to search for guests. So Avimelech said to him, "Well, I see you're not just somebody who's happy to have people come to you, but you're somebody who actively seeks out the opportunity." So that shows us that you're somebody who's godlike, you're somebody who is involved in the Tashio Day and trying to really be like God. Now I see what's going on with you. And that already, the Elder Sir of Nashim tells us that was a fundamental difference between Avram and Eov. That Eov apparently was also a tremendous Machnas Arfim. He was somebody who was very hospitable, and he had all these gates in his house also, just like Avram, so people should be able to come in from any direction. They shouldn't be embarrassed, they shouldn't have to walk around, they shouldn't have a hard time. But they didn't even reach half as much as what Avram did, because Avram sought it out. Avram went to find people, and that's a whole different level, and that's how Avram really represents this whole godlessness, the whole godlike quality in seeking out Chesed. And that was really what was evidenced in the beginning of last week's parsha, where we see Bikur Cholam modeled. And that's the whole discussion in itself. And as the Torah tells us, or the Torah kind of implies, you have to read it between the lines, that here Avram was recuperating from his third day of after the meal, so he's in a state of tremendous pain. So our first Baruch Hu comes and visits him. That's the Yeroi Lamin, God comes and visits him. And as we can discuss when we talk about Bikur Cholam, so apparently part of his obligation is to see what the patient needs, what exactly is on his mind. So first the plan was, is what Rashi tells us from the Midrashim, from the Gemara in Bav Metzia that talks about this. So originally the plan was that there shouldn't be anybody on the streets, there shouldn't be anybody walking outside, because Avram wasn't well, so Avram should be able to have a break, so he shouldn't have to worry about the guests. So the Medrash tells us that Kadosh Baruch Hu took the sun out of its covering, out of its narthex, so it should be a very hot day, so nobody's going to walk in the street. So this caused Avram pain. He was anguished at the fact that he didn't have any guests. So when God was visiting Avram and saw what the patient needed, so he changed the plan and he brought out these three guests. He brought out these shluchim, these malachim, to come receive his hospitality. But the truth is, it's kind of a hoax. Right? It's kind of a practical joke, because here he has Avram go to all these lengths to take care of these people. They're not even people. They're not even human beings. They don't have any needs. So it was kind of a waste of his effort. So why should God do this to Avram? Why didn't he give real people? It doesn't seem like it's really accomplishing anything. So here a lot of commentaries point out that, no, you see, what was bothering Avram? It wasn't the Vihatlarecha Kamoth. It wasn't that there are people who need something who were not being served, and therefore it's not fair to give them people who don't really need anything. The problem was, he wanted to express his godlike qualities. He wanted to express his halachta b'drachav. He had this quality of chesed that he had to seek out, and he had to express it. So therefore, to be able to go through the motions, that's what has the impact on the soul. That's what refines his godlike personality. So that was true. That's what happened. So therefore, he got to practice this on these malachim, and therefore that accomplished the halachta b'drachav. And even if they didn't actually receive anything from him, that's not necessarily a problem. That doesn't change the fact that he was still involved in a full-fledged halachta b'drachav at that time, and that was also, and that's also an accomplishment. Some point out, there was a little bit of a glitch in that interpretation. Because if you look in the Rambam in Hilchos Eva, when he talks about all these chasadim that we mentioned, so then he also goes on, and when we talk about Hachnos Sarachim, maybe next week, so we'll mention that Hachnos Sarachim has an extra part, that the part of escorting the guests afterwards, they call Levaya, so that, the Rambam says, that's even bigger than Hachnos Sarachim, that's a huge deal. This is a tremendous thing, and this is something that Avraham Avinu instituted with his guests, and that we have to follow. So it sounds like from that that Avraham was involved in the Halper of the Kamocha, because that's the source of what he's talking about over there. So if the angels were not really people, so how did he fulfill Halper of the Kamocha? That's a good question. That's a little bit of a glitch in that interpretation. Unless you want to say, a little bit similar to what Rosh Sherbuch was saying, that basically, that mandates chasadim what people actually need. And the specific formats that are being instituted, that goes beyond what people actually need. That's in the essence of creating a godlike personality. So Avraham Avinu wanted to make a big show of instituting Levaya. That's how some of the commentaries read, because at that point he already knew they were malachim. It wasn't the beginning when he was hosting them thinking they were people. By the time he made sure to take care of them afterwards, he already knew they were malachim. And still, he made sure to go through all the motions of escorting them and, so to speak, protecting them when they didn't even need protection. So some of the commentaries understand that that's the idea, that Avraham Avinu was modeling this quality as the halacha b'drachos, as something that we have to, as something that we have to do. So this could have a number of ramifications on different levels. So for example, do you need to have the proper intent? It's a topic we talked about a little bit 2 weeks ago. When you do an act of chesed, does it have to be something that you have the right motivations for? Or if you have ulterior motives, or what if you don't even know what you're doing? So as far as v'ahavta re'echa kamocha, so we see that v'ahavta re'echa kamocha is considered to be a result-oriented thing. So if you end up helping people, even if you're not really intentioned in that direction, it doesn't matter. That's the fulfillment of v'ahavta re'echa kamocha. But it may not necessarily contribute to your godlike personality. It may not necessarily be a fulfillment of the halachta b'drachos. The flip side is if you have the intent without actually accomplishing anything, or let's say you host guests who turn out to be angels, so you don't really help anybody who needs it, but you're practicing honing this possibility, honing this trait, so that's a kiyum in the halachta b'drachos, and that may not be a hafta l'reicha kamocha. When it comes to stuff, as we mentioned in the past, you find various sources that go in both directions. But on the one hand, the Gemara seems to suggest that stucca doesn't have to depend on intent at all. So the Gemara says, well, somebody gives stucca not because he's looking to help anybody, but because he wants the merit. The Gemara says in Rosh Hashanah that he gives stucca on Manasseh Yechia Bani, that my son who's sick should get better. So that's Harez that Tzadik Gomer, the Gemara says, that's considered to be a total tzadik. You don't have to worry that you're not focusing on the recipient. And the Gemara and Sachem says even more than that, that if somebody drops coins from his pocket and doesn't even realize he dropped the coins, that's also a fulfillment in the mitzvah of tzedakah. So on the one hand, we find the result being the whole story. On the other hand, and along those lines also, you find it sounds like from the Gemara that if somebody gives tzedakah with the intent of helping people, and it turns out that the people he gave it to are not really needy, the people who fooled him. So the impression you get from the Gemara and Bava Basra is that you're not in the fulfillment of tzedakah at all. So here again, a lot of the commentaries explain that that's as far as the v'ahavta re'echa kamocha component, that as far as actually helping people, so then we're very result-oriented. But all of that would contribute to the halachta b'drachos, creating a godlike personality. Hi. Right, so there it's difficult. It sounds like that should be an example, except that it really breaks down according to both. I'm sure you've probably heard the story that the chassid calls up the Rebbe and says, I want to visit you. The Rebbe says, I'm not interested in having any visitors. And the chassid says, no, I really want to come, I want to come. And the Rebbe says, it's 2 o'clock in the morning, I'm not interested in having any visitors. And the chassid says, I want to fulfill the mitzvah of Bikur Cholim. And the Rebbe responds, I'm not a lulav. I'm not a chetzer shel mitzvah for you to come and shake. So yeah, that's probably true according to both, because as far as you have the recha kamocha, so you're not fulfilling his needs. But also as far as valach the b'drachos, so he has to at least be doing it in a way that's consistent with his own internal logic. So it happens to be, you open up the Yeridea, and we'll talk about this in a few weeks, when you see Bikur Cholim, so you see that the is very specific, he shouldn't come at a time when he's not interested, certain hours are set aside already in the Sulchan Aruch, it's discussion about how practical that is. And the Rambam even writes, Shalvavad Shaloyat Shriach, you have to have intensity, and that's going to be a pain in the neck. So what exactly the finish of that is the whole discussion, but because it seems to be self-evident in a certain sense. So even the internal rules of the concept, it's questionable whether you'll be able to say anything. The question is, what if you try? You know, if you think he's interested and you drive 3 hours to his house and you get there and the nurse comes out and says he's not taking anybody right now. So that maybe you have to rechit amalcha, maybe you didn't actually accomplish anything, but as far as the last of the jacha, so that you probably did accomplish a lot. So that might be more of an example. But if you're telling him not to come, you come anyway, then you're probably not really accomplishing anything on either front. Hi. Many of them say they're not. Yes, it's important to know. Not everybody, which is a little bit part of also a revised point, that not everybody's going to be the same way about this, which is part of why we have to have, the knowledge that there are chesed that we may not be interested in ourselves. And it's a big deal, because there are a lot of things which not everybody relates to. And so it's important to have that. But at the same time, then you have to know how, when you're doing the chesed for others, so what exactly do they want and how are you sensitive to what they want, which is not a simple thing. And that one we'll go into more detail about that, both when we talk about Vikra Cholim and also Nichol Madelim. It's also a major issue. And again, when we get to those in the coming weeks. When, say it again, when you go to... Mm-hmm. So those people don't want to... It's very difficult on the visitors. The question is the patients want to be visited. The Gemara already says that there are certain types of ailments which are embarrassing and which we assume that people don't want to be visited when they're suffering from these ailments because they don't want people around at that time. So there are a lot of different concepts that the Gemara specifically mentions in the Yoredei brings down that there's an assumption that people won't want to be visited. So this is part of the sensitivity that we can talk about more when we get into that topic, you know, in the full sense. It's also discussed, Yeshua Menachem Barenberg has a tshuva about this in his tshuva Shtraya Yeshua, where he takes up the question of, should you have compulsory chesed? Should we force people to involve themselves in active chesed? He says, so maybe as far as people's needs, that might be valuable. And we find when it comes to tzedakah that we do have a system of compulsory tzedakah of people who are able to afford it. But as far as the goal of being like God, of the last of the Jacha, so then it's hard to imagine that if you're forcing somebody to do something he doesn't want to do, so then it's hard to imagine you're really going to accomplish anything. There's some discussion about this in the realm of both like a mitzvah puzzle and a mitzvah. We assume if you're involved in a mitzvah, so you're exempt from doing other mitzvahs. So the whole discussion, you have somebody who's present at a funeral, so it sounds like from some sources, like the people who are really helping out and who are there as a chesed are exempt from other mitzvahs. The people who just happen to be there and who are gawking or just looking at what's going on, so they're not part of the mitzvah. So the whole discussion in the svarim there, but they're still accomplishing something, right? They're still adding to the cover of the mace, even if they don't realize it, even if they're not doing it on purpose. So it's a question, when do you say that they're accomplishing a mitzvah that's going to exempt them from other mitzvahs? And when does it depend on intent? And when does it depend on result? And to some extent, it's a little bit of both. And there's a whole complicated discussion of how exactly to figure that out. Hi. Yeah, so we say that in general, and we certainly believe that. You know, that's the Sefer Achinuch's famous principle in Mitzvah Yitzchak, which says that Acharei HaPu'ulos Nimshachos HaLevavos, that the heart follows after the deed. So we recommend that you do things that will bring about the intent will follow it. And the Gemara also has that idea that L'olam Yasek Adam V'Torah Mitzvah Safilu Shalol Lishma, so we talk Shalol Lishma Abol Lishma, that we recommend always that somebody should be involved in the Torah Mitzvahs even if they're not motivated for whatever the reason is, because it tends to lead to it. So for sure that's a valuable thing. There's no question as far as what exactly you're accomplishing. Maybe a step along the way, or maybe the actual mitzvah, depends on what exactly we're focusing on. Right, so that's in the context of Tinu Prika. The Gemara says that, you know, the Torah says that you have to help somebody with their packages. You see somebody who's suffering because he's got a heavy load, so you have a mitzvah to Tino Prika. This is also a discussion. That's also a specific chesed where here also, in theory, you can figure it out on your own. You don't need necessarily a special mitzvah in the Torah to say that if you see somebody who's collapsing under his suitcase, that you should try to help him. So apparently there's a little bit more to it. You know, the context of the Torah is actually talking about animals. You see the animal that has, somebody's loading onto his animal, you see somebody, you see that he's having a hard time, so the mitzvah to help. There's a whole discussion in Rishonim, do you say that applies to people lost because everyone agrees, you find somebody who is collapsing with his suitcase, you've got to help him. The question is that the Hasla Recha Kamacha only, or is that somehow the specific mitzvah of Tinu Prika? So in that context, the Gemara said, you have a choice, you have your friend over there who needs help, and you have your less than friend on the other end of the room who also needs help. So somewhat counterintuitively, the mitzvah is to go first to the guy who you don't like so much, and the hopes that that will counteract it, that by involving yourself in an act of helping him, that will reverse things. But you certainly find that idea, and that's a part of the whole notion that the more you're involved in these kind of things, the greater impact it's going to have on your personality. So to what extent are you obligated to involve yourself in chesed? So that's an internal question which no one's ever going to resolve in an easy way. The Mishnah says in the beginning of Maseches Peah, that we recite every morning, that there are certain things that don't have any measurement. Some understand that that means that there's no minimum. So that two of the things that are listed in that Mishnah, Talmud Torah and Chesed, that both of these things, there's no minimum. So if you want to know, I can only learn for a minute. Am I in fulfillment of the mitzvah of Talmud Torah? Can I only learn for a minute? Or do I have to learn for an hour? Do I have to learn for a half hour? What's the minimum of a shiur? So that's what the Gaon explains like this, that's what it means. There's no minimum. If you have a minute, that's Talmud Torah. If you have 30 seconds, that's also Talmud Torah. If you have 1 second, whatever it is, that's the fulfillment. So too, chesed is also mentioned there, that when it comes to chesed, so you say, okay, how do I fulfill a bika cholim? How do I fulfill a nicham aveilim? I can only go for a minute. I can only do a little bit. I can only start. You know, is that anything? So that's what the Mishnah is saying. Il dvarim shein lahem shir. It doesn't have any measurement. Anything that you're going to do, that's an act of chesed. That's an act of Talmud Torah. So most understand it differently. Most understand that we're talking about a maximum shir here. But in either case, as the Tari Evin points out, the Tari Evin was the author of the Shaikas Ari, lived in the late 1600s. There's a commentary to the Gemara in the Chagiga where this Mishnah is quoted also. So the Tari Evin points out that you have different categories in that Mishnah. That Mishnah talks about Peah, that's why it's in Maseches Peah. So, for example, so it says, you know, the mitzvah to leave off a corner of your field. So this is listed as something that doesn't have a shear. So what does that mean? It means that you have a certain amount you're supposed to leave off, but you can leave off more. It's still part of the mitzvah. That'll also do something good. But essentially, there is a shear. It just means that you can expand the shear. When it comes to Talmud Torah and Chesed, those are really their own category, even though they're mentioned together in the mitzvah. And both of those are just things that defy shear, and that you can never put a measurement on them because they're both always there. They're both always constant. There's always going to be a need to get involved yourself more in Chesed, more in Talmud Torah. So how do you ever stop? So that's the question. So that becomes very complicated to figure out. There are a few rules that are based on Gemaras. For example, the Gemara says in the context of Hashavas Aveda, so if I have an obligation to return lost property, so there are exceptions to that obligation. So one exception, for example, the Gemara says, you have a zakin v'anil l'fichlod, you have a person who is a distinguished elder, a person who is a mechubadik person, and it's not in keeping with his dignity to return this lost property. As we said in the past, let's say he's the mayor from the Monopoly game, and he has a sash and a top hat and a monocle and a fancy mustache, and in order to return this object, he's got to go through the garbage dump. So by the time he comes out, it's going to have a ripped sash and a squashed hat and a scratched monocle. So then he's not obligated. So his personal dignity is going to be compromised. He's not obligated to do it. So it's a question, does that apply to all acts of chesed, all acts of helping other people, or is that just by Hashavas Aveda? Because when it comes to Bikur Cholim, you find explicitly that this does not apply. That a person who is very distinguished has to come and visit even somebody who is far less distinguished than him. So even if the visit itself would normally be seen as something that's not in keeping with a person's stature, it doesn't matter. It still has to do it for the purposes of Bikur Cholim. So which is the exception? So are all of Chasadim like Hashavas Aveda except for Bikur Cholim, or is Hashavas Aveda the exception? That's a question. Is that only assumed that maybe in other acts of chesed, that if it's not l'fi chlodo, then you would be exempt. But as Rabbi Saul David Harfenis points out in his Tshuva, the author of many fine Sfarim, and Tshuva by Baruch David, as he points out, when we talk about it being not in terms of your dignity, so chances are we have to be talking about something where people see what you're doing and they don't realize what it is. It's not obvious that it's a mitzvah. So you're going to have to act in a way that's undignified and people aren't going to understand, so it's going to be embarrassing to you. But if it's clear that you're involved in the mitzvah, so then even if you think it's undignified, you see there's no such exemption, that the mitzvah itself should never be considered to be undignified. If people perceive it that way, that's their problem. That's how we assume. So it's a question whether there is such an exemption like that in general when it comes to the chesed. And even if it is, then there's a machlokas in Rishonim. So we say that still if the person who is dignified has the right to be mochel and says, okay, I'm going to do it anyway? Or do you say if it's really not in keeping with his covet, maybe he really shouldn't? That was a machlokas of Rishonim. Because you also find in terms of monetary commitment that when it comes to Hashavas Aveid, again, the Gemara says that if it's going to cost you more money than it's worth, then it's not obligated. You're not obligated to do it. If you find something worth $100 and you're going to have to take off work for $200 worth of time in order to return it, so you're exempt. So again, you find a discussion that maybe we should apply that to Chesed also, but if it's going to have a big impact on your pocket, you're not, strictly speaking, obligated. As in general, as the Gemara points out in Sacha Sukkah and a few other places, that there is a difference between Staka and Chesed. They have two different sets of rules. The Staka is something that you do with your money, and that's limited. You know, recommended between 10 and 20%, not more than 20%, et cetera, et cetera. And Chesed is what you do with your body. It's what you do with your time. And has its own set of rules. It's a whole different story. So when we talk about a Gabbai Staka, for example, somebody who devotes his time to collecting tzedaka, so that's an act of chesed, while giving tzedaka itself is not really considered to be chesed, that's considered to be tzedaka. Two different categories, tzedaka and chesed, and the Gemara says in Sukkah that in a lot of ways chesed is actually more impressive than tzedaka, and one of the examples is, the Gemara says, zeba gufo, zeba mamono. So chesed doesn't, by definition, require you to really spend money on it. It's really more about your time rather than money. And in theory, that could also impact on how much you're obligated. And the Gemara says that Rashi about this, that even though you have these exemptions, that if you're too insistent on these rules, it's not a good policy, because you could end up becoming chassid shalom enough in need of them. That you shouldn't be too quick to exempt yourself from chassid and saying that this is too much money for me, too much time, too much whatever. There are certain points where you have to be reasonable and you have to realize that it's too much. But if you're too quick to invoke these exceptions, then it's not a good policy. It's not a good way to live. Hi.
Mm-hmm.
Aaron. Aaron was always from it, right.
So in that case, suppose they don't want to make peace. Don't bother. Stay away.
Yeah, I mentioned recently that Nelson Gestetner, so a great post-Dick and Vaybrak, he writes in his commentary to Pirkei Avos that this Mishnah in Teah that talks about that it was Varim Shein Lahem Shir, and the things that you get reward in this world for in the next world. So you have listed there Gnuas Chasadim, and you also have listed as a separate category Havas Salam Ben Adam L'Chaveru, that making peace among people is also considered to be something that gets a reward in this world and the next. So he asks, so why do I need both? Isn't that also a chesed? Isn't making peace perhaps the biggest chesed you can do? So why do I need that listed as a separate category if they're already included in the chesed? So he writes over there exactly like you said, that sometimes people don't realize that they need this to be done. They think that they're right, no guy thinks he's right, and therefore we should be fighting and we should be doing what we're doing. And when somebody comes to try to make peace, who wants it? I'm not interested. So therefore, even though it really is a chesed, but it has to be listed separately because people don't always perceive it as a chesed, and therefore it needs its own separate choice. But you're right, strictly speaking, that's certainly included in the realm of chesed. So it's very difficult to apply any standard rules to this because, in general, so we have a rule, let's say, when people are trying to balance Talmud Torah and chesed, The Nesiv has a whole discussion about this in his commentary to Chumash. The Nesiv writes that a person should see where his personality leads him. If a person within the realm of activities that are good, you know, I mean, if a person is flying to get the tendency to rob banks, he should do that. But when in terms of different mitzvah type actions, in terms of chesed and Torah and related types of things, so the Nesiv writes that a person should look to see where his soul takes him, to see where his tendencies go, and then he should assume that that's what the Kadosh Baruch Hu was saying to him, that this is your realm. This is what you are meant to excel in, and that's what you're meant to pursue. So it's a very difficult thing to try to figure out. Specifically, let's say, balancing Talmud Torah and Chesed. So that's a hard one to work, because normally the rule is that if a person is involved in Torah study, so he's not exempt from other mitzvot. He's supposed to interrupt learning in order to do other mitzvot, unless it's a mitzvah she'ashalasus le'idei, that a mitzvah that's going to be done by others, so then you should continue learning. So a lot of the acts of chesed don't fit neatly at all into this category, because on the one hand, will they be done by others? Maybe, maybe not. But on the other hand, they're infinite. They're never going to be done. They're never going to be accomplished. So it's really the other end of the spectrum. It's always going to be there. So if they're going to say, well, I have to do this because it's not going to get done, so then Talmud Torah completely goes out the window, because you're never going to be finished. On the other hand, so to say, well, okay, if that's the case, I can exempt myself totally, because simply not something I can fit in. So then, as the Gemara says, like you have no God, whoever has no Gemara Chassad and has no Eloka, which we understand, is the idea that's how you imitate God. So then if you have no Chassad in your life, then you're missing that component. And we see it's crucial to how you're going to behave, crucial to how you form your personality. So you can't exempt yourself from it totally, but at the same time, it's infinite, so you can't say, I'm not going to do anything else until it's finished. So we're caught in this balance of, like the Mishnah says, lo alacha b'lacha ligmur, it's not something you can be expected to finish, but at the same time, lo atab al charum hi batul, and you can't say, well, then I'm off the hook, because then again, that brings us back to our problem, that the whole existence of being an Abrahamic people, of being people who are like Abraham Avinu, we're going to be missing that if we don't have chesed in our lives. So it's almost time for marriage, so we have to just quickly review some of the key points that we spoke about. So we spoke about the fact that we saw a lot of different choices that point to chesed as an obligation. On the one hand, we have the expression of Klal Yisrael Shir Hashayam, I want to be like God. You have Yisrael's instruction to Moshe, which Moshe agrees with, tell the people how to be. And you have the pasuk of following in God's footsteps, and the Gemara says, how do you do that? You do that by copying his attributes. I mentioned the Aruch Meisharim, that means, and that there's really three different levels of how this world is understood. People volunteered on their own. Yisro told Moshe this is the way the world should be. And the Kadosh Baruch Hu then gave it as a mitzvah. That's all one realm of where chesed is coming from. On the other hand, we also have an obligation to have Baruch HaKamocha. And we discussed a little bit how the Rambam sees that as a positive mitzvah. And also a little bit of discussion, the Ramban and Masha, and the whole story, that it seems to be really hard to interpret that way, because you can't to worry about others like you do yourself. So many understand it to be a negative mitzvah. Don't do it to other people you don't want to have done to you. Makor for the issue of mazik and other related things. But the Rambam and others do see it as a positive mitzvah. And he writes that all of the chasadim that we have are really extensions of this mitzvah, in addition to specific acts being takanas d'rabban. So the whole discussion of why we have these takanas d'rabban, that they're essentially covered by the rishis. As we mentioned, Rav Leich's suggestion that not everybody relates to all of them and therefore needs to have them taught. I mentioned Rav Schoenbach's idea that sometimes people don't have anybody in front of them who needs anything, so the Haper Chakamocha doesn't seem to be there, but we need the specific mitzvahs to go seek them, which really gets us to the point of the two mitzvahs. On the one hand, the Haper Chakamocha being result-oriented and being about helping people, and the Haper Bedracha being about yourself and creating a godlike personality, and they have a lot of overlapping territory, but they have sometimes different rules. So we talked about the message of Avraham Avinu, how Avimelech tells him that either you're the type of person that's godlike because you're seeking after it, and even when he's sick and he's officially going to be potter, God has to bring him these guests so that he should be able to engage in a chesed. And even though it's not really the real McCoy, they're fake people, and it shouldn't really be anything, but as far as the Lachta B'drachav, he accomplishes that, even if it's not the Yahavta Recha Tavokha. And we're talking about these issues of intent and result in the different Gemaras about Shtaka. That Shtaka can be accomplished even without intent. And the question of being compelled to see the Tzar Yeshua, etc., etc., and various ramifications, so sticking mitzvah, platzim, and a mitzvah, how exactly that might make a difference. And then I talked a little bit about the question of how do we define the obligation of chesed, the mission of Elohim Shir. Some things there's no measurement to, so does this mean there's no minimum measurement? One way of seeing it doesn't mean there's no maximum measurement. The way it's more normally taken to be, and we mentioned with Tariyev and explaining how Torah and chesed are both things that are essentially intimate. And then we talked about the Azaki Vainal Sikhodu, if it's not keeping with the dignity, the exemption that we do find by Hashem Saved, and we don't find it by Bikr Cholim. So which exactly is the exemption of the story, and the whole machlok is shown them whether it's something you could volunteer to do if you are in a deemed exempt, and the question about how do you have to spend money, do you not have to spend money. And we talked about the fact that essentially chesed and stock are really two different realms, that are two different sets of rules. One's about your money and one's about your time, and some of the issues there. We mentioned the general advice that the Gemara gives, they call it Makayan Asim Akaf Sofal Ovidei Kaf, that we don't recommend that you're too particular about this because it's not a good recipe for your own success in life. And then we talked about how do you balance, or how do you talk about balancing between Talmud Torah and Chesed and things like that. I mentioned this just comment about looking at where your personality goes to, and about how the general rules of Osek, Mitzvah Patron, and Mitzvah are a little difficult to apply, because this is, whether this is something that can be done by others, will be done by others, the whole category doesn't seem to fit. It's essentially infinite, but if it's infinite, then you're back to your starting point. So trying to find this balance and this whole idea of Lalacham Lacha Ligmar seems to be essentially the guiding point, bringing us back to the concern that if we want to be godlike people in the spirit of Avraham Avinu, so we have to find a way for the expression of Chesed to be at the center of everything, no matter what other pressures are there. So God willing, in the coming weeks, we'll talk about some of the specific mitzvot, such as Hachnas HaSarchim and Bikur Cholim and Nicham Aleilim, at least those three. We'll see maybe one or two others in the context of this whole meta theme of Sefer Bereishis. Thank you, Mike. Chef.
One or two other points.
Did you have more already?